it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Sports Talk on KFH presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days. You can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Welcome back into Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. CBS, speaking of, you'll see games this year on 12 News. Thanks for watching us right now on 12 News Connected and on Facebook and on YouTube and on X. Thanks for listening to us on KFH. If you missed anything with a conversation with Kevin Saul, you can go back and listen to that on the Odyssey app. We have a jam-packed hour here. We've got to get to the Royals last night. We've got to get to an AFC West divisional preview. And we've got Shreyas Lada stopping by in just a little bit to chat about KU's opener and the game coming up Friday night. We are making our way through it. We'll give away some HTO in this hour as well. And a quick thank you to Crestview Country Club, as it is tournament season out at the club right now, Tommy. Lots of different events and groups go, and they have their charity tournaments and things out there at Crestview. Still plenty of chances to play golf, though, 36 holes. This is golf weather if you can find the time and if you can dance around the rain a little bit. It is not so hot. It's beautiful. Give Crestview a call. Ask them about all the great facilities and things that they have, all the tennis, all the events inside. They've always been redoing restaurants and all of these kinds of different things. Give them a call. Ask them about the memberships today. Tell them Tommy and I sent you here from Sports Daily. All right, Tommy, let's talk Royals. Here we go. So here's how this works. It was 4-0 when I got the Tommy text. I can't remember exactly what you said, but essentially you were planting the flag. You're like, I think it might be time.
I think my words exactly were the Royals are cooked. Because at that point they had 15 or 16 straight innings without a run against the White Sox in Chicago, and I'm like, yeah, the Royals are cooked. They are done. Take them out of the oven. It's not going to happen for them.
And at that point, I think I told you a Tommy Jinx might be the only thing that can save them at this point. And sure enough, next couple innings, they scratch it together and they get the win. Now, this has happened in the past before. It is, I believe, still undefeated. So, we're good. Tommy, Royals fans, thank you and appreciate that last night. Martin Perez, the guy that shut them down for a while. Michael Lorenzen was about what we thought he'd be, to be perfectly honest. You know, that's kind of what I thought he'd give him. I didn't expect, not scoring any runs then on the back end, but that's what we saw. Now the Royals, again, I feel like all of these games against these teams are must win. And that's a lot to put on a rookie and Ryan Burgert and all of these things on the road, the 10th out of 10 games you've played without a day off, but that's what it is. And hopefully that 8th and 9th inning woke them up a little bit. Like you don't have time to mess around anymore. It is going to already be nearly impossible to still get into this thing. You cannot lose games against bad teams if you think you're going to be able to get in. So the Royals do make up a ground again on Seattle, who lost. They don't make up any ground on Boston or the Yankees, who both won. The longer the Yankees and the Red Sox are able to stretch that out, the tougher those are going to be because you've lost those tiebreakers to those teams. But Seattle's right there. You're three games back, and you've got Seattle still on the schedule for three games in mid-September. So I think that's where we focus in now, Tommy. And look, it was the big hitters mostly that got it done until that last inning when it was the bottom half of the lineup who stepped up. Bobby Witt Jr., which he never does, came up short twice in huge opportunities for RBIs in that game last night, and they still got it done. That's another good sign.
Yeah, offensively, it was contributions at the end of the game from Massey and Isbell that came in, and you know, Massey had a couple of at-bats, but he came in as a pinch hitter. Kyle Isbell came in as a pinch hitter. Both of those guys got it done and able to help drive the Royals to victory. But we got to go back to talk about what we talked about yesterday. What did we talk about yesterday with Michael Lorenzen? He has to have a short leash. This is the most predictable pitcher in Major League Baseball. He gave up one run through the first five innings. And then he went back out there in the sixth and immediately got in trouble. And then immediately sat down. Like we should just know this by now. And the fact that, when he came back out in the sixth inning, my first thought was like, well, here we go. Yeah, this is a mistake. Like, what are we doing here? This is the way it goes every single time with this guy. Every time. And what did we talk about on the show yesterday? Matt Quatrero has got to know that. He's got to be better than that. He's got to not...
The first base runner that gets on in the sixth, he's
out. Get him out of there. Or even, maybe not even have him come out in the sixth inning. Like, he pitched, he gave up one run through five. Okay, cool. Like, that's about what you're going to get from Michael Lorenzen, not knocking him. He kept the Royals in the game through the first five innings. Turn it over to the bullpen after that, because he's shown that he can't go any deeper than that in the game.
I think the reason strategically that you at least let him get out there to try to get maybe fall into some outs in the six is because you've got to play now today with a rookie on the mound, and who knows what could happen. And if you have to pull him in the second or third inning, you haven't had a day off in 10 days and all those things come into play. But yeah, you don't need to let him burn. Like, you know it's coming. So when it does, you're just going to have to bite the bullet and see what happens today. But I agree. And look, at the time, it didn't feel like it mattered because it didn't feel like the Royals were going to score.
Yeah, they weren't hitting at all.
So it was like, whatever. But it ended up, you know, they got it done. And I don't know if a game on a, you know, on a Tuesday night in Chicago against a team that's 48-83 could be any kind of spark or catalyst. But coming back can always do that, like coming back and roaring back in a form like that. So maybe I get it. We're grasping for things with the Royals right now. We are, but that's where this thing sits right now. You know, I don't know if Boston and the Yankees are going to end up being gettable in any way. But right now, Seattle is, because you play them three times.
And you're three games back in the wild card from them. Like, you're, you are not out of this by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
But had a devastating loss like last night happened after getting shut out on Monday night. I mean, vibes would have been extremely low. They're still kind of teetering on the edge right now, but vibes would have been really, really low. I think the other thing, and you mentioned like grasping at straws, and this might be a little bit of a grasp at a straw a little bit here, but I think the Royals are doing themselves a tremendous disservice offensively by not having Mike Yastrzemski in the lineup every single day. He pinch hit last night. You remember like when he first got traded to the Royals, his average, I think, was hovering around 230. Like, it was maybe even under 230. He's got that average all the way up to 250 right now with an OPS over 900. And I understand, like, you want to get Randall Grichuk in the lineup every once in a while. You need to get Michael Massey. You feel like at least you do in the lineup now that he's back and healthy. And you've got kind of a logjam at second base with India and Adam Frazier. And you want to try to get Massey at bats. Like, I get all of that. You've got to have Yastrzemski, I feel like, in the lineup every day at the leadoff position. He has been white hot leading off for the Royals, and they didn't have him in the lineup last night. And Michael Garcia will lead off when they don't have Yaz in the lineup. But I feel like moving forward, I don't feel like you can take him out of that lineup. You need to have him out there every game.
I think Quatrero's done a pretty good job with lineup button pushing.
How many leadoff home runs has Mike Yastrzemski had since he's been a Royal?
Well, no,
and you take his bat out of the lineup.
I get it. I don't know. I don't need Tolbert in the lineup.
No.
You know what I mean? Like that's where it's like, yeah, okay. And I also don't care if Grichuk gets at bats either. until he starts hitting. I'm very much in the hot hand, you know, approach at this thing. But I do think for the most part, Q has been putting the offense in good positions to succeed lately. I think it's some of the decisions with starting pitchers that have been. And look, it's all difficult. It's all difficult when the margins are this thin. It's all difficult when you're in the middle of a 10-game stretch where you don't have days off. Not that anybody in the lineup needs a day off, but it will. We're going to micromanage this thing. We're going to analyze this thing because that's where we are in this season. It's just looking at the Mariners' schedule real quick. It's not easy either. They're playing San Diego right now. And look, on the road, they're about to have to go on the road for 9 straight, including 6 against Cleveland and Tampa. They will, I think, catch Spencer Strider and Chris Sale when they go to Atlanta. And then they still have to play, of course, the Royals. They still have to play a road series against the Astros, and they still have to play the Dodgers. So they have at least as difficult, if not even a little bit more. It's probably about even with the Royals. So that's certainly good news. I wish Seattle could get in and you could chase down Boston or the Yankees just from a baseball rooting perspective. That's going to be tough. And they need to make sure, if nothing else, in that series with the Mariners, that they end up winning the season series so they have that tiebreaker. Because right now, that may be a backbreaker against the Yankees and the Red Sox. The Royals play again tonight at 6:40. It's the rookie Ryan Burgert on the mound for Kansas City, trying to finish this thing off, see if they can get a big, cozy, no doubt about it win to finish off the series and finally get a day off before they come back home for 9 straight. All right, when we come back, let's talk AFC West. It's our final NFL divisional preview next on Sports Daily.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It's a Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday here on Sports Daily, and even though the sun may not be shining today, we will be celebrating here like the sun is out with our Hawaiian shirts. Speaking of the sun, the sun, I guess. Let's give away some HTO. Some iced tea goes good in the sunshine or on a cloudy day. You can win some right now from HTO, a free cup of tea. All you got to do is text the keyword tea to 20357. You might have seen, if you are a a member of the HTO Tea Tribe. There's a new Poppy collaboration coming soon. We'll have more details on that soon. But right now, you can just go in and get your free cup of tea. More than 20 flavors to choose from. Text that keyword tea, 20357. These are good for East Wichita, West Wichita, or Derby. Good luck, everybody. Tommy, we come back here. NFL divisional previews in today with the AFC West, of course, featuring the Kansas City Chiefs, who have won this thing how many years in a row now? Eight? We had eight straight divisional wins.
Nine,
in a
row. I think.
Chiefs, maybe nine, lose count. Eight straight divisional AFC championship games is what they're going for this year. It was seven straight last year. All these records are in place. We're going to look at this division. I do think this is one of the more interesting divisions. The NFL is always close. I mean, it's pretty safe to say all four of these teams, Tommy, got better. The Chiefs would be the one where maybe people could debate you on that a little bit, on whether the Chiefs got better than the team that went to the Super Bowl last year. But I think all four teams got better, quite frankly. And I think this is going to be a wild division. And I do think it's not going to be one of those years where the Chiefs roll through undefeated in the AFC West. I think that the Chargers and the Broncos are real threats. Man, I think the Raiders, I don't like this Jacoby Myers news for them, but you're telling me they're going from what they've had to Pete Carroll and Geno Smith and an all-world rookie running back with Pete Carroll. I mean, they've got some good things cooking there in Vegas as well. This is going to be a fun division.
Well, it's hard to get worse than what the Raiders had been, right? So, I mean, it's not a super high bar for Pete Carroll and Geno Smith to overcome to get better than what the organization was a season ago. They've got some questions behind Geno Smith, and hopefully Geno Smith can stay, you know, healthy. Obviously, Aiden O'Connell is out for a while. They traded for Kenny Pickett. You know, so they've got a little bit of depth, you know, at least behind Geno Smith at quarterback. But the question becomes, can Geno Smith continue that career renaissance that he had in Seattle? And I think he was, you know, pleasantly surprising in his tenure with the Seahawks. So I wonder if he's going to be able to continue that now that he's repaired up with Pete Carroll in Vegas. But I do think they'll be better. I don't think they'll be a ton better this year because there are still quite a few question marks. I would say, like, outside of Max Crosby defensively, there are question marks for the team. I'm still going to put them at the bottom of the AFC West, but they, at least in my opinion, will be better than what they were a year ago.
Yeah, look, it is a bet on Pete Carroll. As much as it is anything else to say they're going to be quite a bit better than they were. I look back at his time in Seattle, Tommy, he got there. God, he was there for almost 15 years and never won. Now catch this. In all of those years in Seattle, he never won fewer than seven games. Isn't that crazy? He always wins. And that was even in the early years and the late years in Seattle when they didn't have a quarterback and everybody thought they were going to stink. And they just never did. Like, they never just outright were bad. And so I think it's very reasonable now to look at the Raiders and at least put the floor at they're not going to be bad. Which, what does that mean? Six, seven, eight wins? I think it's all on the table for them. They look, his best years, they ran the hell out of the ball. They just took the guy who can do that, who looks as much like a bell cow running back in the NFL as any prospect we've seen in a long time. They've got Brock Bowers, who's outstanding. I think their line's okay. Their defense got a little better last year. They've got a lot of pieces there for Pete Carroll to work with. So I do think they'll be a little better, and I still do think they'll finish last in the division. I thought about trying to figure out a way to do something sneaky with them until this Jacoby Myers thing. That's just kind of like fine.
I think it's fair to say, at least in my opinion, I don't know if you agree with this, that while they may still end up in the bottom of the division, they're gonna be better than 4-13. They're gonna have probably a couple game improvement. Like, it's probably gonna be six or seven wins as opposed to four, and that's a massive improvement for Pete Carroll taking over that team.
Everybody really sure. Well, like, yeah. I don't think it's going to be, oh, good, it's the Raiders. Like, no matter how many games they win, like, they're not the same as the Jets, or they're not the same as the Titans, or, you know, they're not in, I think they're above that bottom tier, which is a massive improvement. The really interesting thing, because nobody's picking against the Chiefs in this division. You'd be crazy to pick against the Chiefs in this division. The really interesting part of this conversation becomes, how do you rank and how do you separate the Chargers and the Broncos? Last year, the Chargers ended up one win better than the Broncos. I think both of these teams have done a lot to get better. I think both of them are just like the Raiders. Look at the coaches in this division. You are looking at four coaches who are very likely to all four be Hall of Famers. I'm trying to think on Harbaugh, but the time in San Francisco was so successful. Like, by the end of the day, there are four Hall of Fame coaches in this division right now. That's insane. And it's going to play out and be messy because of that, I think, this year.
Yeah, I think the team in the division that is most likely for regression, in my opinion, are the Chargers. I think the Chargers may take a slight step back, with the injuries that they have already dealt with before the season even starts. That's going to be difficult. I know you're high on the combination of Ladd McConkey and Keenan Allen, and I get it. From a talent perspective, they're both there. McConkey was great a season ago. Keenan Allen is back in his home after a year in Chicago. I understand that at the surface level. I still have a little bit of concern about the fact that they both play about the same kind of wide receiver. And so they've got to try to figure out a way to have both of these guys on the field and be productive when they both kind of do the same thing. And so that I think they'll work their way through that, but I don't think it's going to be incredibly smooth at the very beginning of the season for them. The Chargers went 11-6 a season ago. I think that they still will have a winning record, but I do think they take a slight step back. I'm going to put them actually third in the division. I'm going to say they're probably like a 9-8 or 10-7 type team.
So here's your I love football stereotypes. They're one of my favorite and like most hilarious things to make fun of. Ladd McConkey's getting stereotyped. Ladd McConkey's not just a slot receiver. He was one of the most effective outside receivers in football last year as a rookie. And I do think Keenan Allen will take work away from him in the slot for sure, because Keenan Allen is just a slot receiver at this point. Ladd McConkey was that's what surprised like the football junkies about him last year, because we all typecast him into, oh, here, look, here's the little undersized white slot receiver, because that's what he was doing that well too. And then he played outside and he was really good at it. And so I do think they're really thin at pass catcher. And I do think that's the concern, like, because after those two, now it's back to like Quentin Johnston, and they drafted a rookie moderately high this year. And it does get a little dicey. But if they are all there, they do fit together well. But I don't think it matters that much, because I think they are going to run the crap out of the ball. I think they drafted Omarion Hampton early for a reason. I don't know what's going on with Najee Harris's eye, but I think they
didn't
want
he have
to
like a
run.
Fire, like fireworks blew up in his face
fireworks
or something
injury,
like that.
Yep. Yeah, he hasn't been back yet. And so while it was trying to be downplayed early, like, I don't think we've seen him since then. Vision is important for a running back. So that hampers it a little bit, that and the Slater injury. Those are tough early on, but man, the pieces, like, when you look at it, look really good in the way they fit together. You've got some good pass catching options. You've got a hyper efficient quarterback in Justin Herbert. I don't think this is the year Herbert's going to like become that gunslinger again, because I do think they're going to run it a ton. I think it'll be more like last year, where he's hyper-efficient, taking care of the ball.
I'm going to say something about Justin Herbert here that I think you're probably going to disagree with, and it might actually make you mad. But I think this is the way that I feel about Justin Herbert going into this season. This is Herbert's last opportunity this year to prove that he is not the Chargers version of Trevor Lawrence. I think that he's got to be at a point. He hasn't won in the postseason. He doesn't do that, right? Like, Trevor Lawrence hasn't done that either. Like, Justin Herbert can throw up all of these stats left and right, but the team doesn't make it to the postseason, or they do make it to the postseason, but they don't win. I think this is the last opportunity for people to be able to look at Justin Herbert and say he is in the top tier of NFL quarterbacks. Like he's around
27.
The same level of guys like Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, like all of that.
I
think this is the last opportunity that fans have to be able to look at him and say, yeah, he could be a top tier NFL quarterback. It doesn't mean that he won't be good in his career, but I think you have to be really realistic about if it doesn't work out this season for the Chargers, maybe Justin Herbert is a good quarterback, but he's not a guy that's going to win us a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I do think that's I don't agree with that at all. Because look at a guy like Matt Stafford. Like sometimes really good and great quarterback. Lamar Jackson's never got there. Does that mean he's not a great quarterback? You know, he can't win the big one. Nobody wins the big one right now because Patrick Mahomes wins the big one every year. But Justin Herbert is miles better than Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence kind of sucked last year. 11 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Like his career, he's thrown 69 touchdowns to 46 interceptions. Herbert's thrown 137 touchdowns to 45 interceptions. Herbert threw 3 interceptions last year and threw for almost 4,000 yards.
Yeah, I'm not talking about their individual stats. I'm not talking about any. I'm talking about him winning in clutch situations,
he's 27. He's only been in the league 5 years. He hadn't had a lot of chances to
What are the odds that
last year was a massive failure, right? Sure. Like last year's playoff game was
What are the odds? What are the odds that when it's all said and done for a career that Justin Herbert has, and hopefully it goes on another 10, 15 years, that we look back on the Justin Herbert career as a whole, and he's this generation's Dan Marino. Like, I think that there is a likelihood that that could potentially be the case, where you've got a guy that puts up insane stats and has been just this, you know, top tier from a production standpoint quarterback, but can never get over the hump and win the big one. I think there's a likelihood that could happen.
Well, I mean, I think we can say that about Josh Allen at this point, too. Joe Burrow did get to the Super Bowl, but he lost it. Marino got to one and lost it. The problem for everybody is Patrick Mahomes right now in this Chiefs dynasty that's been in the middle of this. The only one that's been able to break that is Jalen Hurts and Tom Brady, I guess. But, you know, if we're looking at that way, I think the interesting thing for me about Herbert is he has now, in his very brief NFL career, just 5 years in, shown us that he can be the pile up insane stats guy, and he can also be closer to what he was last year, which is the ultra efficient fit Jim Harbaugh's style of we're going to take care of the football and not make mistakes guy. He's been both. And so I think his trajectory is fine. It's, to me, it's more of a question, is this team going to be good enough? Can they get through the injuries that we're already seeing that we literally see? I've never seen in sports a more snake-bitten injury team than the Chargers the last 10 years. It is uncanny.
And if Rashawn Slater hadn't have gotten injured, I mean, they would have had one of the best offensive lines, I think, in the NFL. I mean, they still got got Joe Alt. They went out and got Mekhi Becton. Like, they've got a good offensive line overall, even without Slater on the roster, but that really, really, really hurts them. So I do have them taking a slight step back this year.
So you have
I've got them
ahead.
I've got the Broncos ahead. I think the Broncos could legitimately challenge the Chiefs this year with Bo Nix taking another step forward. I think he was a revelation a season ago, obviously. And that connection with Cortland Sutton's been really, really good.
I love RJ Harvey. I don't know how soon he'll take over. There's no telling with Sean Payton. I love everything they've done this offseason, to be perfectly honest with you. It's really, for me, with these two teams, and I do think they'll be like a game separated again this year, and I think they're both playoff teams. I'm pretty sure we'll do that tomorrow. The only thing is, I'm going to stubbornly, because I wasn't a huge Bo Nix believer before the year, I'm going to stubbornly bake in regression for him this year for no reason other than, man, I just didn't see it in college as much. And he's probably going to make me eat those words real quick this year because they brought in Evan Ingram. Like, I literally like everything that they've done. But I'm going to give the Chargers a one-game nod and say they're both playoff teams and the Chargers are a game better, just like it was a year ago. I think both of these teams, though, to the conversation that matters here, which is how does it affect the Chiefs, are very dangerous teams. I think both of these teams feel like a chip in a chair kind of teams. I think the AFC is loaded with talent this year, and these are two teams that significantly got better in the offseason and will be better. And I just like, and even down to the Raiders, like I just trust all their coaches. Like they're not going to be bad. None of them are going to be bad. And that takes us to the Chiefs, Tommy, who, surprise, will pick the Chiefs to win the division, right? Like it is still the Chiefs division to win. They're not going to go 15-2 again this year. So the question becomes, if they don't go 15-2, and let's say they go 12 or 13 wins, or maybe it's 11. Are any of these teams good enough to jump up and be a threat for the division? If we both assume, and I think we both do, that it won't be 15-2 this year.
Yeah, maybe at 11, potentially at 12, not at 13. I think that if that magic number, in my opinion, is 13,
I don't think they're getting 13.
But let's say it's the magic number. If that's the magic number, yeah. I think they'll have, you know, a game or two separation from, in my opinion, the Broncos will be the next team behind them.
I think the number is 12, and I really do think it might be 11 this year. I mean, the Chiefs' schedule is brutal. They're going to have to deal with the suspension of Rashee Rice at some point, and I don't think their defense is going to be as good. While I think their offense will be better, they're also not going to block kicks to win games, have toenails be out of bounds, and all the wild and wacky things that helped them to 15 years. Again, don't take that as a knock, Chiefs fans. I think this team is better than it was a year ago. I just don't think they're going to win as many regular season games because it was so unlikely last year to get them where they were. I think it's a team poised to be a much better playoff team than it was a year ago. And they'll just, the bounces aren't going to all go their way, or maybe they will, because Taylor and Trav are engaged now, and all the good energy is there, and conspiracy theorists will just have a field day. Are you ready for that, Tommy? Like, are you ready for that? Like, we get this nice break of, like, whatever. It's going to be good. It's just a quick aside joke. We all will be living in that. They're our royal family, aren't they? Like, they're going to be our what they do for the royals in England.
Like, that's great. Cool. Can I get some breaking news in really quick before we go to break?
Yes.
According to Pete Thamel from ESPN, Dylan Edwards will miss the game against North Carolina this week and is expected to be doubtful for the game with Army in week 3. So that just came down. Pete Thamel from ESPN reporting that today.
No North Dakota. That's not good news.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
We do have our KU insider, Shreyas Lada, KC Star, joining us here. Shreyas, all his best Hawaiians are in the laundry. I get it. It's been a busy week for you. Shreyas, we got a game in the books here. How does it feel to be back into football season?
Good. It's been chaotic, busy, fun, ready to be back in the swing of things, honestly. And ready for, honestly, this week to be over with so we can go to Missouri, Kansas.
Yeah, it's great to actually have football to talk about and not just the new stadium, which obviously was phenomenal and outstanding on Saturday. The entire atmosphere was great, but the game was even better. The Jayhawks dominate Fresno State, and after a 7-7 tie early in the game, it was all Kansas after that. I think, honestly, as we all know, the biggest takeaway has got to be the way Jalen Daniels played. What was your takeaway, your assessment from his performance on Saturday?
Yeah, he was phenomenal. I think that's the best game he's had in a long time. I look back and I was thinking about it since I've been on the beat. I think it was the best game he's played since that Illinois game in 2023 when Illinois came in and he was just in complete control. Jalen looked good last year at points, but I don't think he was this, I think, accurate, this good with his legs and passing. He was doing a great job of making something out of nothing. He wasn't forcing reads. I was very impressed with just how easy it looked like that for him. And honestly, the one worry I had, and I wrote about this after the game, and it was something in a national conversation, was he got hit a lot. And they ran the ball 8 times with him. He was the second leading rusher for Kansas after Dan Hyshaw. And that's going to be a worry for me all season, is how do you limit Jalen Daniels from getting hurt? Because he's clearly super important for this offense and their aspirations to go to a bowl game or beyond.
So, I mean, you say you're worried about it. Is that a concern that the backs can't handle a workload enough to take that pressure off of him? Is it him as a runner? Where is that concern born? Just his injury history, maybe.
Well, absolutely his injury history, right? But also, like, he's not 6'5", 250. Like, there are quarterbacks that are built bigger. Every time Jalen runs with the ball, which is a major weapon for Kansas football, I collectively, along with probably all of the Kansas fans, hold our breath, right? Because, you know, we've seen him get injured and have to deal with injuries. I talked to him after the game about it, and he was kind of, you know, pretty brazen of like, well, I'll do whatever it takes, you know, run, pass. Great things I'm sure Kansas fans love to hear, but, you know, there is a balancing act. I mean, Leipold said it again, they're going to have it all year. You know, like, that's, there's a reason why Marshall and Cole Ballard played. And, you know, a part of that reason was, Leipold said, was because they didn't want Jalen to keep on taking the hits he was taking that game. He got smoked twice, I think, right before the half, in the first half. And he got hit hard out of bounds in that first run he took. Those stuff add up. I mean, he's not 6'5", 240. You know, he's a 6-foot quarterback, if that, 6'1". And, you know, I'm always worried about it because, you know, Kansas knows. I mean, Cole Ballard and Isaiah Marshall are good players, but they're not Jalen Daniels.
It looked like his favorite target in the game was Cam Pickett. And he had a really big game. Of course, Emmanuel Henderson showed off his speed in his first game with the Jayhawks. Overall, with the pass catchers, how did you feel like the entire group did?
I think they were great. I was very impressed with Cam Pickett and Emmanuel Henderson. Henderson clearly cannot be, you know, guarded one-on-one by Fresno State. They had to put a safety up top over him. And when they kept him one-on-one, it led to that defensive pass interference that kept that drive going. Cam Pickett, great player. I think he's going to be a big target for Jalen this year. He reminds me of Luke Grimm in that sense, a slot receiver that he can trust. I think 10 different guys got touches in the receiver room and the tight end room. I think it was, you know, ideal level of offensive outcome. They're spreading the ball, makes it that much more dangerous. But it was a good first game for Kansas and what.
Yeah, what about the defense? Because they, you know, they gave up the early touchdown, we kind of worried, and then that was it. I know it's Fresno State. How much staying power did you see from the defense? How do you think this defense holds up through, you know, through when they get to the real bullets flying in the Big 12? Did they show you what you wanted to see?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different schemes that DK McDonald showed. You know, I was pretty impressed by that. I felt like they were doing a lot of different things that maybe we didn't see under Brian Borland. I'm really intrigued to kind of see how they look against Missouri. I think that's going to be the one test that I'm very worried about with this KU secondary being so young, you know. But that being said, Missouri's quarterback, or lack thereof, we don't know which one it is at this point. You know, that could be something Kansas could take advantage of, right? These guys, Austin Alexander, Jahil Hurley, Jalen Todd, they're good players. I think they're just young and inexperienced, and veteran quarterbacks can take advantage of them. Like, you know, EJ Warner did at points during the game. But I was very impressed with KU's defense. It bounced back really well after that first drive, looked pretty bad. I think they only allowed, 2.7 yards per completion or whatever after the first drive. It was an impressive effort. The defense looked a lot faster than it has in the previous years. And a lot more athletic, I think. You know, I think when I look back and I see, like, KU's defense from my first season covering the beat, which was, I think, the Liberty Bowl season. You know, I was just there for that game, actually, really. But they were a lot slower if you go back and watch those games. The defense just wasn't quick enough to keep up with Arkansas in that game. Not Liberty Bowl. I think it was Liberty. Yeah, it was Liberty Bowl. But yeah, it was, you know, I was impressed with the defense. I've always been intrigued with DK McDonald being the defensive coordinator. I know a lot of, you know, people surrounding the fan base and in around the building were very hyped and excited about him being the defensive coordinator. So, you know, I think, you know, positive momentum on the defensive side. I need to see it against Missouri. That's where I'm at with things.
Well, and with all the questions going into the season about how will the secondary respond without Kobe Bryant and Melo Dotson out there patrolling the field, you know, the secondary was opportunistic. They had a couple of interceptions and all of that in the first game against Fresno State. Are there any concerns for you, Shreyas, about, again, we know it's Fresno State, and so we're trying to grab a lot from this one particular game, but any concerns about the fact that the Jayhawks only scored 7 points in the second half, and then from that point on, it was kind of just on autopilot, on cruise control? I know that they had Cole Ballard in there, and they had Isaiah Marshall in there as well, but any concerns about how things just kind of got stagnant there towards the end?
I felt like after they scored that first drive on in the second half, they kind of took their foot off the gas pedal there. So I'm not super worried about it, but it is something that, you know, maybe you have to look at. And like, did Fresno State figure out some things? I think there were a few opportunities for them to score. They just didn't, you know, get in good enough position, or they didn't convert a fourth down, for example. And I think Zabrowski talked about it, you know, there, that fourth down they didn't convert. Like, you know, they wish it came back and they converted that, because that was a big fourth down there that could have put even more points on the board. But honestly, I'm not super concerned about that. I felt like if they wanted to, not to be like, you know, it's a will thing, but I think if there was a little more urgency and a little less Manoa play calling the second half, I mean, Jalen, I think, attempted 3 passes in the second half. So it's clear they were just not really running the offense.
Trying to run the clock out. Shreyas, you can find all his work at the KC Star. Good stuff on fourth down conversions and looking back at the game, and I assume a preview coming on Wagner. Shreyas, what do you have for us?
Yeah, story came out today on fourth down conversion. Fun fact, Kansas has 1/5 of its fourth down conversions and attempts of last year.
Wow.
They were dead last in Big 12 fourth down conversions, and or not conversions, attempts, and they were, I think, there was only 6 teams below them in the entire FBS that had less fourth down attempts. So I think Zabrowski's going to be aggressive. I mean, he had 17 in one game at Wisconsin-Whitewater. I don't expect that to be at Kansas, but I think there will be a decent amount of games where they have at least 2 fourth down attempts, just because that's who he is.
That's it's living dangerously, as K-State fans would tell you after the game against Iowa State. Shreyas, we appreciate it. We'll look for the work, and we'll be back again next week to look ahead to a game of more significance.
100%. Thanks, guys.
There goes Shreyas Lada. Find all his work at SHRE98 on X. Good stuff there. Tommy, real quick, we got to jump back to the news you broke as we switch over to K-State. You didn't break it, but you broke it to us.
Yeah.
Pete Thamel broke it.
Yeah.
Dylan Edwards, for sure out this week, according to Thamel, likely out next week. My head goes 2 different directions with that. My hope is they're just playing it ultra safe to get him ready for Big 12. My fear is that this is a really significant ankle injury.
Yeah, I mean, we know that x-rays came back negative. That was announced. I think Chris Kleiman talked about that yesterday or the day before, that x-rays came back negative, so they felt good about that part of it. But even if we're talking about an ankle sprain, a high ankle sprain, whatever that is, that can linger. That can go on for a while. My big takeaway from that report is that if he's ruled out for this game this weekend and already being discussed as being doubtful for Army, yeah, we're talking about something of, you know, fairly high significance here. I think the big question mark and the major priority is going to be, can they get him ready to go for Big 12 play? What is scary about this a little bit, and I know that the offense doesn't solely rest on the shoulders of Dylan Edwards, but man, could the K-State season be over before it really even gets started? That's a big question that I've got.
So here's what I would also, if you just look at the schedule, it's Arizona on the road after that, and then they get a bye week before UCF. And remember, Arizona's not a Big 12 game this year. So like in a really conservative sense, if you want to refocus on just the conference season for K-State, there's a lot of time before they play their next conference game, not till September 27th. So that's
really,
what I mean.
That's the biggest thing. I mean, it's got to be. You've got to refocus on the conference season. Like, they're not going to get an at-large into the CFP at this
point. Well, I don't know that they were either. But what I mean is, like, do you break your back to go on the road and beat Arizona and take a risk with Edwards there? Or do you just play it safe and look ahead to that. That's what I'm, you know, the chances of any Big 12 team, we've talked about this, making it as an at-large this year are low anyway. So it's I can't figure out the reasoning on the caution for Edwards. Is it just over cautionary for that reason? Or is it really such a bad ankle injury that it could be something that, that lingers here for a while? And that would be the part that I think if you're a K-State fan worries you a little bit, but they've got a get right game this weekend against North Dakota. Who's not like Wagner bad, I don't think, but shouldn't be a problem for K-State. I said, they finally did put a line for that one out. They're 25.5 point favorites.
We'll pick it. We'll pick it on Friday.
I don't like picking that. I'll tell you that right now. 25.5 points. If you're telling me Dylan Edwards is for sure out. All right, we'll pick it. We're picking preseason games. We're certainly picking that one. It's all coming on Friday. We've got fun stuff tomorrow. We'll talk K-State tomorrow with Tim Fitzgerald. All right, that'll do it for us here on Sports Daily. Don't forget Royals baseball right here on KFH tonight, 6:30. You can listen over the air or online at kfhradio.com and, of course, on the Odyssey app. Royals have to have it. Tomorrow, Tommy, we will talk to Tim Fitzgerald. Our K-State insider coming soon on Thursdays. We're going to bring back our betting insider, PJ Glasser. Quick programming note. We're looking forward to that.
We're knocking on the doorstep. It's going to be exciting, man.
I can't wait. We'll have more on this Dylan Edwards news as well tomorrow. For Tommy, for Max, thanks to Kevin Saul, thanks to Shreyas Lada. I'm Jacob. We'll see you tomorrow.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.